for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Within a few hours, if not minutes, we should know the fate of General Stanley McChrystal, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan. Impertinent remarks attributed to the general and his close aides about some in the White House and senior diplomats could cost him his job. Joining me in the studio to discuss General McChrystal's comments, reaction by the administration, and what could be the next step in America's longest war, retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor, Michael O'Hanlon of the Brookings Institution, and the National Journal's James Kitfield. Do join us. I'll be interested in your reactions as well. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Twitter or Facebook. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
Hi, good morning.
Someone said to me just before I went on the air, if my son or daughter were there in Afghanistan and had heard these comments and heard the way top brass is talking, I would be horrified for my youngster if that person, my son or daughter, were there in Afghanistan. What's your reaction, Michael?
Diane, my reaction is complex. I think we do need to, frankly, get a pulse of the troops. My guess, however, even though there are these disputes about the restraint on the use of force that came out in the article as well, that General McChrystal is generally admired. He certainly is very admired among most of the broader leadership in Afghanistan, both international and Afghan. And I think his problems are primarily in Washington. Now, they're very serious problems, and it's his fault that this happened, and it's a quite grave set of offenses. Having said all of that, if you do want to focus on Afghanistan, my overall impression, without overclaiming from my relatively short trips there, is that his standing there is much, much better, and he's much more respected there than he's made himself here.
Colonel McGregor, we've all heard or read these comments. Do they, in your view, rise to the level of insubordination?
Well, they certainly meet the requirement for relief based on the Uniform Code of Military Justice, because he's made very disparaging remarks about the president, the vice president, the national security advisor. The regulations are very clear about that. If you make disparaging remarks about those people in the chain of command, then you can be removed pending court-martial. So, frankly, the president doesn't have much choice, in my judgment. He has to remove him. What I thought were interesting about his remarks, though, setting aside the inappropriateness of them, was a sense that Stan has figured out, Stan McChrystal has discovered that he's on a fool's errand, that these objectives are unattainable. These are things that, by the way, he did not develop. This report and its recommendations were not his invention. Those things were conceived by people working for Petraeus and handed to him, and then he sallied forth to do the job, and I think he's discovered it won't work. And that's part of the frustration that he expresses in his comments.
James Kitfield, as a journalist watching all of this, reading the reports, what's your reaction?
I'm kind of flabbergasted that we have a four-star general here. You mentioned the point that, you know, if someone's son or daughter is serving there, and this would be demoralizing, which is why you don't let these things become public, even if you feel them. And it gets to Doug's point. I mean, by actually voicing them and voicing them in front of a reporter, I don't know if it rises to the level of insubordination, but it certainly rises to the level where that decision is in someone else's hands. President Obama will make this decision. I disagree with Doug. I think it could go either way. There's other things than just his comments to consider here. Michael pointed to the point. The big picture here is how the war goes and what happens if he changed leadership horses in midstream here is going to be a big concern of Obama's. But, you know, I was just flabbergasted that the guy doesn't have more, just a sort of naivete that was coming out in that Rolling Stone article, which I've been through very closely, where these guys, you know, were out drinking with this reporter, letting their hair down, saying the most sort of kinds of things that's not really aren't that surprising. What's surprising is that they said it in front of a reporter and they said it in front of their boss. I mean, if I was the boss there, you would cut that kind of conversation off because they're putting words in his mouth. So the whole, you know, I sense, and people I've talked to in the story sense that, you know, he comes from really a special forces infantry culture. He spent 5 years in Iraq doing these special forces hunter-killer teams looking for the top, you know, wanted list in Al-Qaeda. I think he has not adjusted his culture of his command to a much broader strategic command headquarters where you have transparency, you have a lot more reporters hanging around. He doesn't seem to have made that adjustment, and it's surprising for someone who's been around as long as he has.
Apparently, his PR person has already resigned. Is that so?
I think so, and I think probably more of his staff need to resign, some of the people who made these disparaging remarks. If I could say one thing, Diane, and Doug raises it, I know we'll get into it in the course of the hour. I think it's important to go through the specific things that we know McChrystal actually said. For example, the statement about General Jones, that he was a clown, that's not something McChrystal said, and the article doesn't imply that it was. There were some things that McChrystal said that he shouldn't have, and I certainly agree with Doug and James on that. But, you know, let's go through one by one. He apparently said that the president did not seem well prepared or to recognize who he was and his role very well back in July. Again, that's not a great statement, especially when not balanced with the fact that President Obama devoted a lot of time and attention to this war in the fall. But, frankly, for Obama to come out and not be able to say that to one of his own staff, I think fails to understand how staff work in support of the general. And it's not a horrible comment to say that in that particular meeting, the president did not seem quite as well prepared as he might have. I'm not defending it, but let's distinguish that from statements that verge on insubordination. We got to be very careful and specific here about what McChrystal himself is known to have said versus the overall tone of the article.
And this gets to the point. I think he has been poorly served by his aides. I mean, if you're in the, and I've been in that situation, and I'm not sure what the ground rules were. It's very unusual. You have ground rules of just a background where you can actually attribute quotes from a drunken party where they're criticizing the civilian chain of command, and you can actually quote them directly and just say one of his close aides, or in some cases the aides were putting words in his mouth. He himself said he felt betrayed by the U.S. ambassador, Carl Eikenberry. He himself apparently said that he thought that Obama was intimidated by the military in one of their meetings. It created a culture that allowed this to go on, and that was a big mistake. Now, again, does it rise to insubordination? I mean, one thing I was struck by this article is, and Michael's right, a lot of it is non-attributable aides who said things in kind of a drunken party at an Irish pub. And I've never seen that before, and that's kind of interesting that it was reported in such depth. It was allowed to be reported. They haven't questioned the reporter's ground rules, so I assume they are sort of admitting that this went on. But it's very unusual that happened.
Listen, I think the listeners should understand that most of the reporters that these four stars have been dealing with since 2001 fall into a couple of categories. First, you've got lots of reporters who are ideologically aligned with the long war. In other words, they're supportive of what we've been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan. So they're going to hear these things, but they're not going to report them. Then you have people that want to cultivate access so that they can write books and make money. And they write, together with their ideological counterparts, lots of puff pieces. I think this four-star assumed, Stan McChrystal assumed, that this was going to be another puff piece, glorifying him and exalting him the way we have done that with all of the four-stars for the last several years. And so nobody bothered to say, listen, this is on background, this is off the record, this is on the record. They didn't bother following those rules because they weren't worried.
It's interesting because Michael Hastings, the writer in Rolling Stone, was only supposed to spend, one day with the general, but because of the volcano, the ash from the volcano, ended up spending a month. Now, did that create a difference in culture? Did the general and his staff begin to trust him in a new way because he was around? I mean, I'm not trying to excuse anybody, but one does wonder what kind of culture was created. Michael.
Well, first, I thought Doug's analysis was excellent just now about the kind of dynamics that could have been at work here. And beyond that, I don't know how to speculate, but I've spent time around McChrystal and his staff myself, and maybe I fall into the camp that Doug laid out of though sympathetic in a sense to the long war. And so they were unreserved with me, and they didn't talk this way around me. I never heard General McChrystal berate or severely criticize any of the people who apparently were talked about negatively in this article. There were questions that we discussed about the Washington policy debate, but they were always done with the utmost of respect for the people involved. So I am just flabbergasted in a different way because this does not reflect the McChrystal I know, or even his staff. And therefore, I'm hopeful that somehow this can be seen as an aberration and that it can be something we move beyond. But obviously,
the president is said to be furious, James.
Oh, and rightfully so. I mean, he's become a serial problem. You know, we had when last year, while Obama had just okayed 20,000 extra troops, he leaks a report of his strategy review in Afghanistan that says, I need many more troops, or else this thing is going south on us. Then when that strategy review is in full circle, everything's going on and he hasn't made his mind up, he gives his speech in London where he basically says, you know, I need these troops, takes a sort of counterpoint to Vice President Biden, who's saying we can do it with fewer troops and we don't trust Karzai. He's saying the opposite. That infuriated the White House. He came back then for a sort of woodshed episode in the Oval Office. Now we have it again. So there is, and I think it gets to Doug's point, greater point, of what does this say about how the Afghan war is going? Quite clearly, the Afghan war is not going very well. They had the Marja offensive was incomplete when they were initially saying it was a big success. The Kandahar offensive has been put off and put off and put off, and now may happen in the fall or may not happen. You have the highest level of casualties this month of any month in the entire 9 years. So we're having a problem with this war, and you're worried that people are starting to point fingers at each other.
James Kitfield, he's senior correspondent for National Journal Magazine. We'll take a short break. I'd like to hear from you. I want to know your reactions. Is this over the top or what? I've asked for your comments. Here are some early ones on General McChrystal and what he has said or the comments attributed to him in an article by Michael Hastings in Rolling Stone magazine, who, by the way, is in Kandahar. Here's an email from Peter in Tarrytown, New York, who says, having been a manager, I've made it clear to my staff it was okay to disagree with me, but do it in private. I will listen. Do it publicly, and their job was in jeopardy. McChrystal must be terminated. He was totally disrespectful of the president and his advisors. He is not and should not be so important to a policy that his removal puts it at risk. It is a war zone. He could be killed. Michael O'Hanlon.
Fair point. We need to avoid overdependence on one individual. But I also would, you know, say to round out the picture of McChrystal, the U.S. military today knows that it needs to be open with information. Now, they made a huge mistake in how they handled this. And again, Doug McGregor did, I think, a brilliant job of explaining the kind of psychology and the kind of mistakes that may have led to this. But the basic notion that they somehow have the luxury of being completely private is not true. McChrystal was very private when he was a special operations guy for many, many years. He knows how to keep his mouth shut. But in this job, he was told to be more public. He just made a mistake, and a big mistake about how to do that in this case.
Here's an email from CL in Carrboro, North Carolina, who says, I completely support General McChrystal's freedom of speech. As a military man, however, he has now proven to be insubordinate to his commander-in-chief for a second time. I hope the president accepts his resignation, as I truly believe there must be another general as capable as he is in military terms. If not, then we're truly in trouble. James Kitfield.
Well, there are no indispensable individuals in fighting a war. That's absolutely true. So if Obama decides that he cannot trust this commander, in which case he should definitely accept his resignation, then there are many able people who can take over and take charge. There is going to be probably, as Michael has pointed out in the recently, there's going to be a learning curve, though. When you change leadership, you change leadership staff, there is a shaking out period. It just has to happen. You know, you could probably mitigate that somewhat if you gave it to General Rodriguez, a three-star who's already in theater and running day-to-day operations. But what you would worry about at this critical juncture, this summer may be the pivot point for the Afghan war, this summer and fall. At that critical juncture, do you have time to sort of have a learning curve at the very top? That will be weighing heavily on President Obama's decision.
And here's another question that a number of our listeners have raised. This one from Barbara. She says, I hope President Obama fires McChrystal on the spot. I thought it was wrong that Obama picked him for this mission, knowing he was one of Bush's puppets who tried to cover up the Pat Tillman death. Colonel McGregor.
Well, first of all, I think it's very important we understand we're not facing the Soviet armed forces. We're not facing the German Wehrmacht. This is not a dangerous enemy that presents an existential threat to our forces in the field. This is a very weak adversary in Afghanistan, just as it was a very weak adversary in Iraq.
Then why haven't we defeated the adversary?
I think that's a separate discussion, but I think it's important that we back away from this notion that you can't make any changes. In 2 years during World War II, we replaced 32 generals in the army commanding divisions and corps while we were fighting the Germans. There are no indispensable men. Charles de Gaulle said that the cemeteries are full of indispensable men. Charles de Gaulle was right. What the president needs and hasn't, in my judgment, gotten is an honest and objective assessment from the generals, and specifically from whoever commands in Afghanistan. If you go back to Bob Woodward's book, I think it was a State of Denial, there is a section in there that where he recounts a conversation between General Jack Keane, the former Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, and Secretary Gates, and this is in 2008. And he says, now, Mr. Secretary, you want to ensure that regardless of whomever the American people elect, we continue to pursue the same policies and we continue to do the same things that we've been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said, and Secretary Gates said, well, yes. He said, then you must promote and establish in authority the men you know we can rely on to keep this going. What I'm trying to tell you is that these are politicized officers. They're not just generals called to duty. These people are committed to the long war, and they've been giving advice that's consistent with that ideological position. I hope that the president acts decisively and removes McChrystal. And then I hope that he doesn't simply take whomever is often, but says, I want to talk to five general officers and ask them. And then I want to send someone there, tell them to make an evaluation in 30 days and come back and give me an honest, objective assessment.
How does this kerfuffle, if I can call it that, compare to General MacArthur's firing by Harry Truman? James Kitfield.
Doesn't really even compare. What MacArthur did was borderline treasonous, because he took a position in a theater of war that he knew was diametrically opposed to his commander-in-chief, and he publicly said that he was doing such. And the stakes were incredibly high, getting us involved in war with China. Truman had absolutely no choice. That was, and he was backed up by the entire Joint Chiefs. You know, MacArthur was really off the reservation. This is something entirely lesser than that. This is a guy who allowed his staff to get drunk with a reporter and run their mouth, having said that, he has shown that there's a culture and an ethos here, to me, that is not adapted to really a much broader strategic picture that he is now in charge of. He seems to have a culture and ethos that reflects to me the sort of locker room mentality of what you frequently see in these direct action special forces units. Very little, the senior officers and the enlisted guys talk to each other, not sir. It's very informal, it's very secretive, and it's very testosterone driven. And it seems to have crept into a very high headquarters for a theater-wide war where it's entirely inappropriate. And that goes to his judgment, but does not rise to the level of MacArthur.
Of course, this is a true dilemma for the president. If he doesn't fire General McChrystal, he's going to be seen as weak. If he does fire him, people are going to begin to question his commitment to the war. Doesn't that put him between a rock and a hard place, Michael?
Well, I suppose that's true, Diane, but this is one of the reasons why I've really become an admirer of President Obama in many ways. I don't think he's going to think of it in those terms. And he's not just going to use rhetoric to suggest otherwise. I believe his own thinking really will focus on the Afghanistan war. And he will think, does McChrystal's role in my policy team here, which has become tortured, outweigh the excellent team work that he's doing in Afghanistan with allies, with President Karzai, who's a big supporter, because McChrystal knows how to talk to Karzai, by the way. He actually goes in and publicly has a good relationship, privately delivers some tough messages when he needs to. Minister of Defense Wardak, same kind of deal. So I think Obama is going to weigh the pros and cons of McChrystal's ability to lead the war effort. He's not going to worry as much about the political spin and about the conversations you and I may have about the perception of weakness or strength.
Colonel McGregor.
Well, I don't know President Obama, but I think that it's a somewhat different situation. I think President Obama was effectively railroaded into the policy that he's adopted in Afghanistan. We had really one goal in Afghanistan after 2001, once we had driven al-Qaeda out, and that was to ensure that Afghanistan would not become a sanctuary for al-Qaeda again. That's a very straightforward mission. That doesn't require hundreds of thousands of troops. It doesn't require billions of dollars. That mission has been dramatically expanded into a nation-building operation, which is entirely unrealistic, with unattainable goals in a place that is not a nation-state, where the culture won't support it, the economy doesn't exist. And I think President Obama was very reluctant, but felt that he was given no other choice. Now he has an opportunity, and that's my point on removing McChrystal and putting someone new in and asking for a different assessment.
To let our listeners know, the meeting between the president and General McChrystal is over. There are no other details yet. I'm going to go to the phones now, 800-433-8850, to Lisa in Cass City, Michigan. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. I always enjoy listening to your show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have two comments, one as a parent and one as a former soldier. First of all, as a parent, and I think the psychology is the same here, I think good parents present a united front in front of the children and then have their disagreements about the raising of the children or whatever privately. And it makes me wonder if maybe the general did discuss these things with the president and got nowhere. I don't know. Maybe your guests would have some insight into that. And then other, as a former soldier, it was very clear as a soldier that you do not make statements disagreeing with your higher up in the chain of command, like your guest said earlier, which makes me wonder, is he asking for this? Everybody knows that as a soldier. So how could he be making these statements unless he wanted there to be something to come of it? I don't know.
James Kitfield.
It raises an interesting point. It gets back to if you read that article, I do not see this as a purposeful shot across the bow from a field commander. It's quite the opposite. I think this was a lot of sort of liquor-infused free talk around a tight circle that made the huge mistake, in my opinion, of including a reporter there and letting this become public. Because when it becomes public, it becomes a huge problem. And so I think it's more that than, like she said, parents have these discussions in private. So do field commanders. They have these discussions one-on-one with, you know, in private, but they do not allow a culture to develop where these things get voiced and in a sort of boisterous way. I will make one point, too, is that, you know, the reason I don't think this is a big shot across the bow from on purpose is he's won almost every policy debate that was that sort of informed the story. When him and O'Biden and Vice President Biden disagreed on the strategy, McChrystal won. When he disagreed with Eikenberry on Karzai, McChrystal won. So he really has no bone to pick. He's won the battles with the policy, but apparently amongst his aides, it left a bitter taste with some of these fellows, and they are very free to criticize them. But really, he has no complaint because in most things, Obama's backed him up, which is what I imagine President Obama has recently said to him. You know, look, I backed you. It wasn't that popular with the base of my party. I went out on a limb for you. Why do I keep getting these reports that you're somehow off the reservation?
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let's go now to Virginia Beach and to Marcy. Good morning. You're on the air.
I just wanted to say that I think that the problem is that this reporter is going to get his 5 minutes of fame. He has couched all of this controversy in the jargon of our popular culture, and that, you know, this is not the Stanley McChrystal that most people know, that most people have experience with. A lot of it was comments that were attributed to his aides, and the final thing being that, you know, this guy was led into, he was brought into the trust circle like in a team, and he shared every little bit of locker room conversation, and I think it was a betrayal. I think that when you're a part of a team, you don't come out and tell everybody everything that goes on in the locker room.
I wonder if this is a case of blaming the messenger.
Oh, I think so. I mean, again, we know what the difference is between background and on the record, off the record. So there's no excuse for this. I mean, it could have been made very clear what was or was not going to be printable. The other thing is, I really think that McChrystal is frustrated because, again, he's been there for several months. He's now discovered things are different from what he anticipated, from what he was told. You know, the Russians said that they needed 600,000 men just to close the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. They ultimately said this is ridiculous because even if we do it and we pour more troops inside the country, we're not going to change it. It's too resistant to change. I think McChrystal's figured these things out, and I think a lot of this amounted to expressions of frustration. But the point is, and I think the caller is right about that, he needed to give that assessment in private to the president. And that's what I think the president desperately needs now. He needs an honest, objective assessment that meets the strategic needs of the United States, not this neocon, let's expand the war solution.
All right, to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and to Dale. Good morning. Go right ahead.
Yes, good morning. I love your show. I've been listening for years, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have to say I disagree with your guess. I think General McChrystal has been around long enough that he knew this was going to get out, and I think he's frustrated because you haven't talked about the diplomatic side, but he's trying to do a military mission, and the diplomatic side isn't progressing ahead. And he also asked for troops, and I think your guess just said frustration has built up within him. And this is, he knew the end was, his time was up because he couldn't do it anymore. And he just let himself go. He just said what was on his mind.
That's really an interesting perspective, Michael.
Well, I certainly would agree with the caller and with Doug and a couple others who have said that McChrystal is under a lot of stress. But I do not agree that he thinks he's in a losing effort. I think that the war has been difficult. I think James Kitfield summed it up well, saying we're not at a point where we would have perhaps hoped to be by now. But nonetheless, I have not detected in private or in public any comments from McChrystal that lead me to think that he's actually begun to give up on the war effort. Quite the contrary.
James.
I totally agree with that. And this is, I mean, to sort of do this sort of political career suicide would not be the way. If you know the ethos of the senior ranks of the U.S. military, I mean, this guy is focused on trying to turn this thing around. He does not want to be the guy infamous for, you know, having screwed the pooch, if you will. So no way do I think that he's purposely, you know, gotten so frustrated that this was an act of political career suicide. I just
James, you mentioned that when Vice President Biden and General McChrystal were at odds, the president went with General McChrystal. Why then these comments about Vice President Biden?
Well, because I think they understand that, within the camp, and there are two different camps in the Obama administration about how to prosecute the war, and Doug would probably represent the camp that says, this is not winnable, let's get out. There's the other camp who says, we can do this, just give us the resource to do it. Biden would clearly be in the camp that says, we need to wind this down. Karzai can't be trusted. The government will never, hold up its end and a counterinsurgency campaign. Let's minimize and get out. And Biden recently said, in 2011 summer, watch, there'll be large numbers of U.S. troops will be heading the way out. That's, and the military hates to hear that. So there's still some residual dislike among McChrystal's staff about Vice President Biden and those who side with that. Also with Eikenberry, who has a terrible relationship with the Karzai, who also doesn't think the Karzai government can be trusted here. General McChrystal, who has the best relationship with the Karzai, doesn't see a whole lot of other opportunities or other ways to go with that. So, there is this divide, and we're starting to see a little fracture here.
And when we come back, more of your calls, comments, I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.
Saving the last member of an Amazon tribe. The story of a lone Indian in southwestern Brazil and how a team of experts ventured deep into the rainforest to find and protect him. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. We have a report from the Associated Press that General McChrystal has met with President Obama and that he has left the White House before a war planning meeting. What does that say to you, Michael O'Hanlon?
If it's true, it doesn't bode well. So we'll wait to hear more.
James?
Oh, I agree. If that's true, it does not bode well. You'd want to have him at that war meeting, not only to answer questions about his comments, but to talk about what are the next steps forward.
So you think he's gone?
I think if that report is true, then he's probably gone.
I was about to promote you, Colonel McGregor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's out of a job.
You do. Okay. We shall wait to hear. Let's go now to Fort Wayne, Indiana. Good morning, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi, Dan. I'd like to say that I love your show and listen to it all the time.
Thank you.
I have a small comment to make about the war in Afghanistan. I just recently returned from Afghanistan, and what I've noticed over there is that it takes often a long time to build relationships with the people that you work with and trust on a daily basis over there. I also wanted to say that, you know, there was a recommendation that, you know, we send a few generals over there and they can get an honest assessment of what McChrystal thinks, you know, is this the truth or is this not the truth? And I got to tell you, nobody's going to speak to the truth to a general. If there's things that are going on that are displeasing to the soldiers over there, you know, the comment was just made that, you know, and you don't speak up and say what you think. And a soldier who's on the ground fighting in war, day to day, living in the less than conditions and things like that, they may say, yeah, we need this and we need that. But they're not going to honestly tell a 5-star general or a 3-star general or 2-star general what they think about their command and how the war's being handled over there.
Tell me.
Why would they? Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, tell me about your service there.
I had great service over there. I would say that I was able to build meaningful and lasting relationships with the Afghans that I work with. I think that they are very motivated and loving people, and I think that the comments about the fighting force of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda over there are very minimal. I absolutely agree. I think that the difficulty that the people are going to have in Afghanistan is finding a sustainable economy that doesn't involve some more of the illicit things that we've experienced.
Tim, thanks for your service. Colonel McGregor.
Well, your call is remarkable because the overwhelming majority of the soldiers, sergeants, lieutenants, and captains that have to work closely with the Afghans do not share his enthusiasm for the Afghans. And I think this is one of the serious problems we have. We don't understand that we're bringing in people from a modern society and introducing them to an extremely traditional or backward one. And that doesn't breed mutual respect, love, and understanding. And that's one of the problems when you bring in large numbers of conventional troops. It was never a good idea. And I think now what we need to do is reassess and look at what we can achieve and attain. But I think we need to get out of this nation-building business in Afghanistan. And I think that's part of the frustration over there, that we're pursuing goals that are really not aligned with what's important. First of all, the Taliban doesn't have any connection to Al-Qaeda. No Afghan in the Taliban has committed a terrorist act against the United States or Europe. The Pashtun tribesmen who are part of that fight you because you're in their territory. You're fighting people who are fighting you because you're there, not because they're Islamist terrorists. We need to come to terms with this and take a look at what we should and should not do there.
James Kidfield.
On the issue of, you know, are the troops telling General McChrystal himself that what they see is the truth? I mean, it hasn't gotten any attention in this recent furor, but there was an interesting part of that Rolling Stone article where he actually got a lot of blowback from young enlisted and sergeants on the front lines who were very upset about his restraint in using air power now because he's trying to minimize civilian casualties, which is, you know, on a strategic level, good for a counterinsurgency operation. But for the guy who life he may be putting on the line, it's pretty unpopular. And they were very out front in telling him, and it was a very uncomfortable passage where, you know, he tried to explain himself and they were just not buying it. So I think generals in the field can get a pretty honest assessment from their frontline troops. That's been my experience.
All right. Next step is Troy. He's in Islip, New York. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, yes. I was wondering, you know, when I spent 21 years in the military, speaking the truth was always encouraged. I mean, you couldn't, like, lie about your commander, but if you spoke the honest truth, you know, a lot of times there's nothing they could do about it. And no one's looking as if the stuff he's saying was true or not. And there's so many worse things going on over there. They just got caught paying off some tribal plates, you know, some warlords. There's contract of fraud galore. Money's disappearing. You know, there's so many movies going on, I think. That's my comment.
Thanks for calling. Michael.
Well, this does get to the broader issue of where we are in the strategy. And I think, let me just say two very quick things, which don't point overall in one direction or the other. I think the training and improvement of the Afghan army is going far better under McChrystal than it ever had before for a number of reasons. We've basically doubled pay. The Afghan parliament doubled, but we're, of course, paying the bill. But that encourages people to stay. We have now partnered with 85% of all Afghan units. What I mean by that is sending a NATO unit to work, deploy, train, and do everything else alongside of them. So they're constantly in this apprenticeship kind of relationship, whereas in the past we gave them a few weeks of basic training, sent them off on their own, and hoped for the best. This is one of McChrystal's signature ideas, and it is going much better. So the Afghan army is going much better. The Afghan police is not yet going better, and corruption in general is not yet being addressed nearly as well as it needs to be.
The Afghan army is effectively a Tajik army with a few Uzbeks. There are almost no Pashtun whatsoever in it or associated with it.
It's not true.
We've got to go back and understand the constituent peoples that live in this country. The Pashtun, the Uzbeks, the Tajiks, and the Hazara have lived in the past in loose confederation. This is not a nation state. The Pashtun regard the Tajiks and Uzbeks in Afghan uniform that come into their territory as foreign as we are. They all universally detest, distrust the central government. Karzai is sitting on top of a narco state. It's no secret. And hundreds of millions of dollars are disappearing into various bank accounts in Dubai and the Cayman Islands. This is one of the reasons that Eikenberry was so critical of Karzai. We've already lost billions in Iraq. We're losing more money now. The corruption is beyond American comprehension. Pouring more resources, more people into this sort of thing is a disaster.
I would just say on the truth that the article points to, and again, it's not the most well-reasoned article in terms of giving both sides, but the truth it points to is there is a fractured civil military team in Afghanistan between Richard Holbrooke, the special envoy, between Carl Eikenberry, between General McChrystal, and between the Afghan government.
That's not good.
That is not good, and that's something we did not see between General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker in Iraq during the surge. There was no way to find light between them, and this does point to a potentially devastating lack of coordination in our own civil military team in country, and that in between that team back in Washington, and maybe if there's any silver lining Obama gets, if General McChrystal does go, that he can address this issue and tell everyone to stop the petty backbiting, get on the same page, or else.
If McChrystal is out, who is likely to go in? Michael.
Well, Diane, I need to very quickly comment on this previous point, because the image of the U.S. leadership that's been painted by all the coverage is somehow of Eikenberry and McChrystal and others just constantly undercutting each other. That is not what I have seen. They do not have a warm, fuzzy relationship. That is fair. And they have said things about each other that have not been ideal. That is also true. However, I have never seen them try to undercut each other in policy terms. So this is a professional group of people that's been trying to make the best of a situation in which they have big disagreements. Now, this latest episode has been very regrettable, because it's a time when I would have hoped things would begin to heal. And so I'm quite critical of General McChrystal for the timing of this as much as anything else. It's a huge mistake at a very bad time. But I don't think it's correct to have the image of the American leadership as sort of almost undercutting each other as an active act of policy.
And who might replace General McChrystal if he is out?
Well, here's some names that have been mentioned. General Rodriguez, a three-star, he runs the day-to-day war in Afghanistan. You probably get the least amount of learning curve problem with him, since he's already in theater, already familiar with the whole operation. You have General Martin Dempsey at U.S. Training and Doctrine Command. He's a four-star, distinguished himself in building the Iraqi security forces, spent a lot of time getting Iraq to where it is today. You have Petraeus himself, who, he's spent a lot of time in war zones, but he is the go-to guy for counterinsurgency strategy. Really, Doug's right. This really is more reflective of his doctrine and strategy. If it was me, I would seriously consider feeling General Petraeus out about whether he'd be willing to go back into the theater.
And to you, Doug.
If I were President Obama, I would look elsewhere. I would try to find someone new. Doesn't necessarily have to be an Army officer. Can be a Marine, can be an Air Force officer, or even a Navy Admiral. I mean, we've got to get out of this service-centric thinking. This is not a conventional war where we are fighting a conventional enemy. We're dealing with very different circumstances. I think Obama needs to pick his man, somebody we may not have heard of, somebody who has different thoughts, someone who can be trusted to provide an objective and honest assessment.
All right, to Oscar in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I might be off on this, but yesterday when I was listening to the reports about this this article, that the reporter actually asked McGeneral about whether he can actually publish just let the article go ahead, and he got an answer a yes as an answer, and I'm just wondering, that just brought up the question, Does the general have a different agenda in his mind? I'm wondering if he's positioning himself for a political career or some sort of other career, because it really, if he said yes to the publication of this article, he knows what the consequences were going to be. So that just brought up the question for me: what's the really real function of saying yes?
Sure. James.
I was struck by the same thing. It's not clear if the Rolling Stone sent them the quotes of only what General McChrystal said. He really didn't say anything that would cause you to worry. If they sent him the whole article, which I doubt, that's not something we would do. It's not something I think Rolling Stone would do. And they read that, and they said, okay, we have no problem with this, then that would be, you wouldn't have to say.
There was a quote about Holbrooke and his email.
The reporter saw an email come in from Holbrooke too,
right,
and reported that General McChrystal said, "Oh, I don't even want to take this. Do I have to take it?" I mean, it really wasn't a big deal. I mean, that to me was like the least of the problems here. The only comment that came out of his mouth was he felt betrayed by Eikenberry, and honestly, even the stuff about Obama feeling intimidated was an aide told me that's how the boss felt kind of stuff. So, again, if they just sent McChrystal's guys his quotes, they probably would have no problem with it. If they sent them the whole story and they saw this and said, okay, thumbs up, that does lend to a theory that this was political career suicide, because you can't read that article and not know the stuff is going to start hitting the fan in a hurry when this is published.
James Kitfield, he's senior correspondent for National Journal Magazine, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Now to Dayton, Ohio. Good morning, Darlene. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane, and I love your show.
Thank you.
Whenever I get a chance to listen to it. You seem to be very fair and balanced, so I wanted to add that. My comment was, we're looking at a president who pulled a general out of a war to discuss an article in a magazine. When you spread it all out on paper, this is the nutshell. If I believe the president should have said, was this said? Is this credible? I need to speak to these men because something is amiss. You have dedicated men that are risking their lives in a war zone that have been quoted when they were admittingly probably drunk. Now, I wouldn't put much merit on that. And again, it's a magazine article. It's a reporter. I would have talked to the men. But I certainly wouldn't have pulled a general out of a war zone. I would have maybe, I think Obama should have gone to them.
All right. Colonel McGregor.
Well, again, we keep flinging this word war zone around as though we're engaged in World War II or something, or Korea. We're not. Again, you're dealing with very, very weak adversaries. You're not pulling someone out in the middle of a crisis. Nothing could be further from the truth. The generals risking their lives? No. They run around with huge security detachments. We've not had a single general officer casually killed or wounded. This is a sergeant's war, a lieutenant's war, a soldier's war. They're the ones that go out and their lives are on the line. I think what we need to do is back away from this and understand that if you do what this person has just said, you look at this article and then you reflect on the numerous incidents involving McChrystal in the past. There is a very definite pattern. There is absolutely unambiguously serious friction, even hostility here. The president has to have the trust and confidence of his commanders. He obviously doesn't feel he's got that, and this is evidence that he doesn't.
The trust and confidence point is central, and I think Doug's exactly right that the president has every prerogative here to make whatever decision he may have made. And even though I've been a supporter of General McChrystal and still am, and hope that he is retained despite these news reports that suggest otherwise, I would acknowledge President Obama's fundamental right to make the call based on his own comfort level with his commander.
And I think it would have been useful to have him back, even if he wasn't in trouble, for this war council, because clearly we've stalled a bit in Afghanistan. So every reason to call him back for a discussion, even if this article didn't break. But I disagree with your listener. This is serious enough that I would call my field commander back and get his side of the story.
Now, what I want to ask you as a reporter, James, is whether in fact you had been in this situation and been given this kind of access, would you assume that everything was printable?
I have been in this situation a number of times, and no, And I still think we haven't heard the whole story of what were the media ground rules for this? Because, you know, and we haven't even talked about this, but I will tell you, there won't be no embeds in Afghanistan at higher headquarters for, I doubt, for quite a while. This is probably set back the reporting of quite a ways, because there'll be the trust between the military and the media has just been shot out of the water. And I, you know, but that's the reporter's every right. If he was, you know, adhering to whatever agreement he had, it's his right to interpret and do. I'm not criticizing him, but I can assure you I've been in these situations, and I also will put things off to, hey, he's drunk. It's not germane to, you know, the general's feeling right now, whether he feels warm and fuzzy about Holbrook or Eikenberry. What's he doing? Is that affecting how he runs this war? That, to me, would have been the more interesting question.
James Kitfield, he's senior correspondent for National Journal magazine. Michael O'Hanlon is at the Brookings Institution. He's author of Toughing It Out in Afghanistan, Colonel Douglas McGregor, U.S. Army, retired. He's author of Warrior's Rage, The Great Tank Battle of 73 Easting. Thank you all so much. Obviously, this story continues. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.